Ahoy hoy everyone, and welcome to this, the 154th episode of Radio Free Nintendo. This is Greg sitting in for Johnny, and joining me as usual, James.
Hey.
Oh, he's bringing it. John.
What up?
And a new addition to the Nintendo World Report staff, Japan correspondent Matt Walker.
Hi everybody, I'm Matt Walker, and Eastmost Peninsula is the secret. Just really wanted to throw in a Zelda reference there. So
making nice with our audience already.
Unlike our last guest.
But yeah, so Matt, you're new to our staff, and we've already got some good work from you. You did some impressions on Wii Sports Resort, and of course, very much a lot of your responsibilities is doing some quick translation work for us when news is breaking in Japan.
Yep.
So would you just like to explain to us how you came to be located in Japan for this past... How long have you been there for now?
God, this is my third year in Japan, I guess.
Right.
So, yeah, I've been living here for about 2.5 years, 3 years, something to that effect. I don't know, it all started in college, you know. I was, obviously, I've always been a huge gamer. You know, ever since I was a kid, I played plenty of Nintendo and Super Nintendo and everything. And so it was always kind of my thing that it'd be cool to someday maybe take some Japanese. So I got into college, and originally I wanted to major in music, but that kind of fell through. So I ended up majoring in programming, thinking that, you know, I could get a job in the game industry. And right. Ended up taking Japanese and really enjoyed that a lot. So I added that as a second major. So after that, after college, I basically decided that, you know, even if I couldn't get a job programming, I wanted to get a job using my Japanese every day at work. So yeah. I ended up working for an automotive engineering company. Had nothing to do with programming, unfortunately. But on the flip side, I was the only American there, so we were using Japanese all day, every day.
Yeah, it's like for full immersion. That's going to bring
exactly.
The skills up even further,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that's the only way you could do it, I figured. So... and then, you know, after about working there in Chicago for a year and a half, I was transferred out to Odawara, Japan, which is just kind of like southwest of Tokyo. And I lived there for 2 years. It was during that period of time that I kind of decided that, you know, well, you know, I don't want to be an automotive engineer anymore. And I still really have this passion for the gaming industry. So,
yeah,
it was actually last year and about... maybe about a year ago now, I started listening to the Bionic Commando podcast, and that just really got me into, like, you know, the game industry, especially listening to, you know, what the guys at the localization team at Capcom had to say.
Yeah.
So last year, about half, maybe 6 or 7 months after I started listening to that, I kind of decided that it was time to move on. So in January of this year, I came back to America for a couple months and quit my job, and then came right back out to Japan, where I've been doing different translation work and programming and stuff. So
that's pretty cool. Were you like an import gamer when you were younger? Did that ever make I was, and you know, I always thought
out of necessity
having Japanese skills would be very useful,
yeah.
But I never quite fulfilled that.
When I was a really small, you know, when I was a small kid, when I was playing like a Super Nintendo and stuff, I remember at the game store, the game rental store, it wasn't even like Blockbuster. It was like this special game rental store. It was called My Games People Play in Michigan. And,
that's a terrible
really,
name.
Really, yeah, it was a terrible name, yeah, but it was a fun place. The people there really loved video games. And so, yeah, they had different imports and stuff. So every now and then I would rent an import. But no, it was the thought that, well, you know, I could play games like... you know, Final Fantasy or whatever.
Oh, the ones that weren't coming out.
Exactly.
The sort of sequel to Secret of Mana or some of these other ones that were quite famous in the sort of Super Nintendo era, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, my whole thought was, you know, especially that I could play these games because, you know, when we were kids especially, all the great games came out in Japan before America, you know.
Sometimes a long time before.
Craig knows nothing about this, though.
And obviously that still happens with big RPGs, so my whole thing was that I could play those games before, you know, everybody else. And then of course I came out to Japan here a couple years ago, and you know, now like for instance Metal Gear Solid 4 and then a lot of the big Nintendo titles, they all come out like, you know, pretty much at the same time around the world.
Yeah, so you're left with Captain Rainbow.
Yeah, that's true. That's not a bad thing.
That's not just a left with, that's a grace twist. Thank you. And
blessed
totally.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
There are actually quite a few games in Japan, though, as we covered in an episode some months back, like Fatal Frame as well and all this stuff.
Touched by the captain.
Yeah. I'm surprised that Fatal Frame isn't going to be released in America. I mean, I haven't actually played the Wii one, but I remember, you know, playing the first one on PS2, and I was, like, scared, you know, shitless. I thought it was incredible, man, so.
Yeah, I guess now it's they've kind of missed the boat a bit because there's this raft of survival horror games coming out pretty soon from everyone and sundry. Silent Hill, Ju-on, this Hudson have got a new one. It's just, like, too crowded now. They've missed the chance for that, I think.
So what
have you been doing most recently, like, with your translation work and things?
Actually, last night, right before I went to bed, I was doing the website for, well, at least for you guys, anyways, for Nintendo World Report, translating out the Pokemon Mystery Dungeon.
Oh, God, no.
This is why
change
I mentioned
the topic.
It. This is why I mentioned it.
So what else are you doing?
Well, not so much recently, but what kind of got me started on trying to do different translations. I mean, obviously, eventually, I'd like to work for, you know, like Capcom or Nintendo or Konami or somebody, as a translator. But in order to kind of get myself, I don't know, get my name out there, I guess, I started by I was on the Bionic Commando message boards, and Ben Judd, the producer of the game, had a Japanese blog, so I took it upon myself to translate his blog every week, and. my hope was that eventually, you know, they might notice that, hey, this guy, you know, has decent Japanese skills. Maybe
send
we can use
his daughter.
And you were saying to me before that you actually sort of had a run-in with the Treehouse guys, right, at some point?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Actually, last year when I started, you know, thinking about this, let's get into the game industry, you know, I started checking all the game websites, all the big company websites. And, of course, the dream for anybody that, at least anybody that, you know, I would consider it true, you know, I don't know, 80s gamer, you know, a classic game, 8-bit gamer, would want to work at Nintendo. So I looked on their website. I looked on their website right after college, and they didn't seem to have anything that I'd be able to do. But then this time, I looked at their website back in October, and they had an opening for, you know, translation position. And I looked at the requirements, and it was like, it fit me to a T. You know, I had been translating, you know, phone calls and video conferences and, you know, all kinds of different documents and technical documents as an automotive engineer for the last 3.5-4 years. So I gave them my resume, and, you know, they took me on for the first interview, went really well. And then the second interview was with Mr. Tim O'Leary, who's the head of the department. Really great, cool guy.
You might have seen him about if you watch, like, game trailers and stuff. He often does promotion for games. He's not like Bill Trinan, who always seems to be at E3, but he does do some promotional work.
Actually, yeah. I mean, I was reading an article on E3. Of course, I didn't get to go to E3 because I was in Japan. But I did see an article that mentioned that he was actually the one translating for Miyamoto during that round table. Yeah, so he's a lucky guy, man. He gets to be, you know, he's like the mouth of God, you know. He'd be like...
Oh, the mouth of Sauron.
Mouth of Sauron, exactly. That's what I was thinking.
It's kind of weird because I can't think of any other company that trots out their translators almost in a PR role like they do.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, yeah, I mean, that's
somewhat a necessity, that's... I suppose, if you... But it's still really, that must have been really cool. Of course, these guys, I mean, it's not just like that kind of capacity, but you think of stuff like, you know, Mario and Luigi in some of these games, you know, I mean, they really have to take on quite a lot of the creative burden because it's not just to kind of get the humor across and things like that. It's not just a case of, you know, translating kind of verbatim the Japanese text. I mean, they really put their own personality and adapt it to Western culture and stuff. So, I mean, these guys are really... you know, important parts and why those games are as good as they are.
You mean
so
the team that translated Rupee Land couldn't just do a literal translation?
I don't know whether they did that or not, to be honest. So, yeah, you describe yourself, Matt, as a true 8-bit gamer. You know, a true Nintendo fan. So I'm going to do something. I hope Johnny picks up on this for future. Every time we have someone new, I think we should say, what are 3 favorite games or, like, most cherished games ever? For you, go.
All right. Well, obviously the first one is The Legend of Zelda: Link to the Past. I play through that game at least once every couple of months.
Are we going to pass judgment at the end of the results here?
Yes. My first comment is, that is a wise choice. Please continue.
Oh, God.
Excellent.
Well, the thing is, we've never done this, so maybe we should do it. Even the 18 months of doing the show, we've never done anything like this. So maybe we'll come to that afterwards. But, Matt, continue.
All right. Well, next is Castlevania. I mean, the Castlevania series in general, but probably the first one is my favorite. I love that game.
Oh, yeah. That's a big one for me because it was one of the first games I ever played, like after Punch Out, I guess. And, oh, yeah, cool. it is great. I really
you
love
didn't
that
start
game.
Easy, did you, Greg?
No. See, I started as I meant to go on, though.
You can see how he formed, how his
the genesis
beat my head against the wall attitude, and just a young Greg Leahy.
Exactly. If you'd given me something different, who knows how different things would have been.
I can just see him with his thumb in his mouth, being like, Ikaruga. Just kind of like a foreshadowing.
So 10 years ago, huh?
Yep, 10 years ago. And go.
Yeah, really, 10 years ago.
The final choice, Matt.
God, you know, like I said, I do love 8-bit games, but I guess if it's got to be a top three, maybe Street Fighter 2.
Mm. Yeah,
I'm a big Street Fighter fan, so
I can't argue with those choices. They're all pretty classic.
Agreed.
Let's
send it round, James. Games that you actually like, please.
I gotta think about this one. Let's see, Mario 64. I actually have 3 N64 games, which is weird, since you know.
Wow. Yeah.
Since I wasn't on the N64 podcast.
The bitterness still remains. That's the greatest thing.
It's never going to stop.
Mario 64. Yeah. Majora's Mask. And Ogre Battle 64.
That's a really cool choice. We might come back to that particular milieu later on with some of our new business.
Yeah,
John,
but
you've got some choices. You must have some real old late 90s N64 rubbish. Let's take it further back.
Mine are. I mean, two. The thing is,
John's
the third
PS3 games.
The third one, mine are all Atari 2600 games.
That's
old. Ski ball.
Mine would be Super Metroid, Final Fantasy 3, which is Final Fantasy 6.
Super love
Nintendo.
That game.
And the third one, it's kind of an open question. I wouldn't
so
say
those two are in a kind of class of their
the
own.
The Conduit.
For you.
That's John's
yeah,
third game.
Definitely.
There you go.
Well, how about a series like what Matt said? You know, Castlevania, Street Fighter. You know, I mean,
or what do you enjoy? You know, I mean, it doesn't have
enjoy
to be,
anything.
It doesn't
That's
have to be.
Our point.
Well, hey, if you don't enjoy anything, there you go. But I mean, like for instance, I mean, with my pick, I still enjoy playing those games, especially Link to the Past. Man, I mean, like you know, sure the genres have evolved and the games have evolved. But it's still just so much fun. It's simple gameplay, maybe compared to what you can do these days.
I like that the guest is talking John through the question. I enjoy this fact.
Schooling him on
Sorry
being
a that.
Nintendo fan.
Well, I mean,
I'll step back a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it would probably be something like Super Mario World. I guess my point is, it's really hard.
Yeah,
for me
I mean, so you're narrowing something down on Mario. It's quite hard.
Yeah, like there's a lot of games like that. But it would probably be overall, Super Nintendo is probably my favorite console. But I mean that's the thing though. I could also throw a whole bunch of NES games in there too.
If I was picking, I'd probably go Super Metroid as well. Just so it wouldn't surprise anyone. I would go. I'd probably go Ocarina of Time. I'm not sure that it's better than Link to the Past, but it had more of an impact on me at the time. If you know what I mean.
Fair enough.
And then the last one, also tricky. I kind of feel a bit like John. Definitely a Mario game could come into it, or a Castlevania game, or even Sin and Punishment, because I love that game so much.
But see, I could also throw Link to the Past in there for my third one too. So
that was about as impassioned as I've ever heard someone talk about Sin and Punishment.
It is a love affair. It's essential. Me and that game. It really is. It's deep. There is a flip side to this coin that I thought would be interesting to explore.
What's your least favorite three games?
With that new game. Well, not so much your least favorite game, but a game that everyone else seems to love that you just don't get for whatever reason.
Oh, I'm going to piss some people off with this question.
Well, it only has to be one. You don't have to piss off that many people.
No, I can't answer it that way because that would end very badly for this podcast.
Right. Yeah, it could well do if I sense where you go with that. So, Matt, I'm going to start with you.
Yeah, well, in particular, I'm not a big fan of first-person shooters, mainly because I suck at them. I'm just really bad.
Yeah, I can sympathize with that quite a lot.
Yeah, I don't know, especially when I try to play online or something, I just totally get pwned and, it's just not even fun.
Oh, that word's got to go.
That's going to be edited out.
Totally get dismantled by superior opponents.
That's a nicer way of putting it, James. Thanks for that.
I'm often obliterated by my enemies.
Perfect. We now have something to cut in this place.
Well said.
So it's like a whole genre for you. You just don't...
Pretty much a whole genre.
And not only a genre, but the sort of preeminent genre of our time.
Well, you know, at least in America, right? I mean...
Yeah, well, that's a good point. You're not there, so I suppose you're in the right place to not be a fan of first-person shooters.
Is it true that they don't like first-person shooters in part because they get nauseous playing them? I mean...
You know, I don't know, but, you know, the interesting thing is that I don't actually have a whole lot of friends that game over here. I don't know. For some reason, it's hard for me to find them. But one thing that surprised me was at my old job, you know, there were a couple of young guys working with me. Basically, I figured that, you know, Japanese people don't have Xboxes and they don't play first-person shooters. So it was near the end of my tenure at that place. We all went out drinking and I was talking to the young guys and they were both talking about how, you know, they had an Xbox and they were playing, I don't know if it was like Call of Duty or something. Yeah, it was like, oh, wow. So you guys do play these games. And like the whole night I was sitting there talking about classic Nintendo games and stuff. And then as soon as they start talking about that, it's like they wouldn't shut up about first-person shooters. And I'm sitting there like quiet because I have nothing to put in to the conversation.
You're like, this is a bizarro world. Where am I?
It is. It really was. It really was. Yeah. But I mean, that's why I'm over here, you know.
All right, then, James, do you want to give us your choice?
I'm actually going to go with real-time strategy games in the genre of, like, Civilization. And the reason I've always disliked them is I feel like there's no mental dexterity required. It's just, can you build more than the other person?
So they always seem because, I mean, you play a lot of strategy games of various sorts in general.
It's just that I prefer some kind of mental acrobatics to have to take place versus can I click faster than you?
Okay, fair enough. John?
Mine would have to be Halo. The Halo series in general.
Yeah, and now, see, this is very different from what Matt's talking about because obviously you play plenty of first-person shooters and you enjoy them. But
yeah, he really enjoyed The Conduit.
You're going to just rag on that old show, is it now?
You lose.
And I mean, I've never understood. The thing is with Halo that bothers me so much is that I've always thought that in terms of first-person shooters, it just plays really slow. It's like just always drives me nuts when I hop into it because I'm just like, I can't play for more than maybe, you know, 15 minutes because I just can't stand it. It just moves too slowly for me. And I can't believe that so many people like that game. It still boggles my mind. Also, the fact that I think it's just so generic. Like, I mean, people complain about first-person shooters being generic, but I mean, the characters in Halo are totally ridiculous. They're just so like, I guess what I can't understand why Halo is praised for the stuff it's praised for.
Oh, okay. Like why it's regarded as revolutionary.
Yeah, like I mean the thing is with Halo, it's like I can see that, you know, obviously it's a well crafted game, but I've just never understood like the whole cult around it. Like the story, I mean, people like, you know, love the story, and I'm just like, man, I hate the story. I think the characters
you don't read
sucks.
The novels?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like any of all the games that should have some sort of, you know, novelized series, Halo. Oh my God! Like the hero doesn't even have a face.
Well, it's text. You don't need a face. It's text, John.
But yeah, well, I could go on, but
so why don't you?
I think if I had to pick one thing, I guess the most that is probably GTA 3 and its derivatives, which I've played at friends' house and stuff. I just don't get it. It's not that I think it's bad by any means, but I just can't get into it. You know, I think I like structured experiences too much to get into something that's that open. Like, it just doesn't really do it for me somehow. Again, I mean, they're much the same as Halo in terms of they're not just like incredibly popular in terms of sales, but also hugely acclaimed. And I don't doubt the quality of the game in many respects.
Yeah,
but it's just
at least in respect to those games, there is a huge amount of content in them, and
You can appreciate the quality, but I just can't really enjoy it on a personal level myself. So that's just one of those things. Really. Well, we've all got to know each other a little better now. I feel better. I don't know about you.
Group hug? Anybody? Yes,
I feel so close to you guys now.
We're going to get underway with the sort of with the new business proper portion of the show. So we'll start off with Matt, as is customary for our guests, what you've been playing recently. I know you did write up some Wii Sports Resort impressions for us. So I know you've been playing that, and that was quite early on. Have you got into it any more since then?
Actually, no, because I picked up Dragon Quest, I stopped playing Wii Sports Resort. I was meaning to write up some more impressions for Wii Sports Resort, and as you guys can tell, that hasn't happened yet. but yeah, that game's a lot of fun. You know, it's a good pick up and play kind of feeling. I remember last week you guys were talking about, you know, concerns with the calibration of the Wii Motion Plus. And what I noticed was that the only time that I ever had any problem with the calibration was actually playing the, you know, that sword game, the fencing game.
Yes, I agree.
It's less fencing, it's more kendo, something to that effect.
Yes.
But the only time that ever happened was basically if I was doing, like, the waggle equivalent of button mashing and, like, you know, waving my arm frantically, like, you know, I had Tourette's or something. Because only then it would seem like, you know, the gyroscope would get saturated or something to that effect. And, you know, you would have to just point the Wiimote at the TV, hit B, and then you were good to go. But, you know, that kendo game, you know, it doesn't really focus on, like, you know, being able to wave crazy. Like, it's all about, like, actually moving fairly precisely so that you block at the right time and you attack at the right time. So it's all very deliberate.
I'm going to argue against that statement because I clearly got my face rocked by another one of our staffers at E3 because she just flailed around with it.
Really? Okay.
It was a disaster.
Maybe it's because you can't block.
It might just be then that, you know, because I've only played against the computer yet. I haven't played against any humans. So, yeah, you make a good point. You know, I mean, I suppose if you're playing against a human that's flailing, you know, crazily.
Yeah, well,
that is the
thing, isn't it? That particular game is one of the ones that's really heavily based on, you know, simultaneous multiplayer, like instead of, you know, the sort of pat around that's like quite common with most of the other stuff. So
definitely.
So your experience in that particular part of it is going to vary dramatically based on who you're playing. But there's a mode apparently where like you just like go through like a bunch of Miis, like it's like, you know, sort of goes on and on and on. Are you sort of fending off loads of Miis?
Yeah.
And I could imagine that kind of, because with this round structure, there's a convenient point to recalibrate at some point. Although I guess a round could go on for quite a while if it was sort of a pitch deal. But with that sort of survival mode thing against a bunch of Miis, that is where you'd think it could be more problematic, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, but for instance, when you're playing that, like, I don't know if it's like a Kumite mode or something, but I know what you're talking about. At least playing against the computer, what I noticed was that, you know, if you're flailing, you know, aimlessly and the computer blocks something, your character kind of recoils.
Yeah, the fall backwards thing.
Yeah. Right. So, like, at that point, like, you kind of instinctively, you're like, okay, well, you know, I can't keep flailing aimlessly because if I do that, then, you know, I'm going to recoil and then someone's going to have a chance to hit me. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, that being the case, I really haven't had any issues with calibration yet on that anyways.
But, I mean, anything stood out to you other than, you know, the sword stuff? And a lot of people have got some good things to say about table tennis.
Yeah, it's table tennis, you know. I mean, I kind of, when I saw that they put that in the game, I was kind of like, oh, this is basically, you know, Nintendo's excuse to do tennis again, only this time, you know, a little more realistically. And yeah, I mean, you know, it's fun. Yeah, that's pretty much all I have to say about table tennis.
It's table tennis.
Yeah, it's fun. It's I don't know, for some reason, it's like, I guess, so that you can see the ball a little better. Like, the ball is the only thing on the screen that looks like it's cel-shaded for some reason.
Yeah, that's right. It is, isn't it? Yeah. It's just weird. Like, everything has that typical Wii Sports look, and then the ball is, like, cel-shaded, so it makes it almost looks like fluorescent or something. It's so color striking.
Yeah, it stands out.
The Duplo plastic versus the cel-shading, yes.
I mentioned in my first impressions that I was kind of a big fan of the canoeing. That was kind of cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember when I was at the event I went to, there was, like, I think a couple of guys that were actually from retailers, like, that were there to try it out, I guess, to assess, like, how much of a goer this was or something, how many orders they were going to put in. They were loving the canoeing. They were having a lot of time.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with it, too.
Retailers love canoes.
Sitting there in the middle of the bedroom, you know, like doing the canoeing motion, and I'm sure I looked like an idiot, but all the same, it seemed to be a lot of fun. So.
If you don't look like an idiot playing Wii Sports, you're not doing it right.
Yeah.
We should just get a video. We should do a video montage of everybody playing Wii Sports. You know?
That is not necessary.
But then we'll put it to, like, you know, some awesome music. It'd be great.
All right, well, we'll move on. We're going to come back to Dragon Quest IX because that obviously is a big deal. But we're going to move on for now to James, what you've been playing the past week.
So I finished off Hawks, which I took it online just to get the online experience. And people online are dumbasses.
No way. On Xbox Live? Really?
Well, the game just got a price drop, so there's some new blood on there, I guess.
Oh, there's a new wave, yeah.
And they are, I just unimaginably stupid people on that game. I mean, just...
Who would have thought that such unimaginably stupid people would be so thrifty?
Well, yeah, well, you know. alright, so you can play any mission with, I guess it's two wingmen, which is the number of wingmen you have in the game. So, first time I played online, very first mission, first thing the guy does, my wingman, nose down to the ground. Like, like within a minute, he is on the ground. I'm like, oh dear God, this is going to end.
Well, you know, a lot of these people haven't played, you know, Ace Combat probably before, and then they haven't probably completed, like, the whole game before they go online.
They haven't learned
probably just
that
get
the
disc
is bad.
Go online straight away and just to annoy people like you.
Well, the outcome of this mission was me being yelled at by some guy that I need to move faster, which is funny. Because the game only has one speed. there's not much of a sense of speed in this game. I'm like, I'm just going to unhook my headphones now. So, yeah, yeah. Not a great online experience. I guess if you played with friends, it could be pretty cool.
Yeah.
With idiots, it is a terrible game. And then I picked up Front Mission as my DS game du jour.
Right, yeah, so this is this come out at the end of 2007, I want to say.
Yeah, I think so.
I think, and it's a Square Enix strategy series that goes back to the Super Famicom, I think.
Yes, and in fact, the game that came out on the DS is that game. It's
right,
the original,
yeah, okay.
And it had never been released in the US, although I had played it prior. And I remember I quit this game on, like, the fifth or sixth mission, back when I played it way back when. And at this moment, like this very moment, as we are talking, I am playing that fifth or sixth mission. And I am reminded, as I actually played it during lunch today because I was more or less stuck at work. And I remember why I hated this game. Hated is a strong word, but why this game pissed me off.
Okay.
All right, so it's a lot like any strategy RPG of that era. You equip your characters. There's kind of a class system. You know, every town, you buy them new weapons and armor. Only in this case, it's parts and weapons. And the classes aren't really rigid. It's based on whatever equipment you put on there. And then the pilot's stats more or less progress as they level up depending on what kind of weapons they've used. None of this is all rigidly enforced. You can basically do whatever you want with these guys, which is essentially you end up with a bunch of almost identical units because, oh, this is the best equipment. Let's put this on.
Right.
What pisses me off is in the game, if you lose somebody in battle, it's not like some strategy RPG games where they're just gone, which is nice. But instead, you know, you're just without them for the remainder of this mission. In fact, I just lost somebody. And I'm not particularly worried about it. I've got a bunch of other guys. So as I was trying to clear this mission for the first time in probably over my life, 8 or 9 attempts, I was on the verge of destroying the last objective when my leader got hit from behind. I'm like, well, that's fine, you know. Or I don't need him. Mission's over. No, actually, that ends your game.
So it's like chess.
Yes, essentially. It makes no sense. It's like, wait, everybody else survives losing. Why not this guy? Mm-hmm. Don't know. But I had to completely restart the mission, at which point I...
So this was not adequately conveyed, like, in the sort of tutorial phases of the earlier missions of the game?
No. So now he's easily the best unit, and I don't want to use him.
But you sort of, there's a bit of a risk reward kind of thing because he could definitely destroy people, but if you use him recklessly and he gets killed, that's all she wrote.
So it's kind of like this weird, like, all right, I'm mad at this game right now. I'm really, really mad at this game. But I'm kind of enjoying it from like a purely mental standpoint of, all right, there's enough thought in this game that it's fun.
Right.
But I have a feeling that I will be swearing at this game up and down for just random moments.
Well, so yeah, but it's getting to be pretty crowded field on DS for some of these kinds of strategy games, and of course, obviously, your PC and all that. I mean, any sense of, you know, where it stacks up with some of its contemporaries? Yeah, you got like Final Fantasy Tactics.
Well,
and...
see, I'm not sure. It's got a lot in common with those games. So, graphically, the game's really primitive. And in fact, even in pretty much every element of presentation, this is a really primitive game.
So it didn't really go above and beyond with the kind of remake.
Oh, they didn't do anything. They literally did nothing. And to put it in perspective how dulled down the presentation is, you wouldn't expect voice acting, obviously. But you would expect the staple of RPG games from that era, you know, the beeping sound when the person talks. You would at least expect that. No, when somebody talks, it's just silent. It's so...
I'm not that big of a fan of that. I mean, Matt was talking about Link to the Past. That noise in Link to the Past for the text is really irritating.
I'm not warning it's lost. It's just, it actually bothers me because I'm expecting it to be there. I'm like, why am I not hearing anything?
Well, it's true. There's usually something, and it doesn't have to be as obtrusive as the Link to the Past
but it's,
noise.
It is literally dead silence. It's so weird. I know that's a random thing to note about the game. It's just... It sticks out because it's so strange.
Well, it could have gone the Banjo-Kazooie route.
Oh, God.
That would have fit very nicely in with that aesthetic.
And I have to say that game stories back at this point were really awful. I mean, the dialogue is so... I mean, I know it was never translated to English originally, which makes
it... So this is obviously a new localization, but the story was still written back then.
Yes.
Is your point, I guess.
Yeah, and the text is inexcusably bland. I mean, like... You need to go here and do it. Okay. It's like, okay. He just told you to wipe out a military encampment. Your answer
Very
should
orderly.
Not be okay. It should be a little more impassioned than that. Okay.
At least try.
Got it. Okay.
Have you got anything else before we move on to John?
No, not really.
Okay. Well, then, John, grace us with your latest play.
John just sounds upset.
Oh, no,
he's
no.
upset. He doesn't want to talk about it.
No, I just feel like I have to decompress after your rants, James. I just need to.
That really wasn't even a rant. That was just sort of like a note.
If you just want to take a few minutes, I can always edit it out.
Just give
you
me
know?
A minute.
Just
a
calm down. Compose
here.
Yourself.
All right. Well, yeah. Just briefly, since James was talking about Front Mission. Just today in the mail, I got Fire Emblem Shadow Dragon, which was on sale at Amazon
nice!
for the paltry sum of $15.
So another strategy game remake, this time of an NES strategy
We're going
game.
Backwards.
Yeah.
Which was also never released in the US.
Yeah, which is funny because James made me laugh because it has the exact same mechanic where if the main character dies, the game is over.
But
so,
yeah, but in that game, if characters die, they're gone.
Yes.
In this game, if they die, you just have to go meet them up at the bar after the mission. I mean,
true. Yeah, this game is even
yeah,
harsher.
That's the famous thing about Fire Emblem, isn't it? That, you know, the units are characters and the characters are forever lost from then on. Not just the leader, although I suppose that obviously applies as well. So, yeah, you played it briefly. Are you a strategy game guy at all, John?
You see, that's what's interesting.
Does John
but
strike you as a strategy game guy?
Well, the funny thing is, I'm certainly not averse to them, I guess.
Have you played a lot of Advance Wars on the handheld platforms over the last nearly 10 years now, I suppose?
Yeah, I've played a couple of them. I think I have both of the ones that are on DS, even though I haven't really played them too much. But to me, like, Advance Wars is kind of its own thing. Like, that's sort of like military strategy.
Yeah, well,
kind
obviously
of
it hasn't got the RPG elements of something like
that's,
Fire
that's
Emblem.
That's actually closer to... like the kind of games that I bashed earlier, a real-time strategy game.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still turn-based, so there's still a fundamental difference.
Yeah, but I mean, you produce the units. They're not of particular value.
No, they're not sort of as scarce.
Yes.
You know, so and certainly you don't have lasting loss like you do in some of these other games. So
I think story takes a backseat as well in the advance.
I mean, usually it's very frivolous, not so much in Days of Ruin, although it's still kind of fairly flimsy.
It's there. It's just... not great.
It's ostensibly dark. It?
Yes, you know. Yes, it is. It's actually a little unnervingly dark.
Shadow Dragon uses a pre-rendered graphic style as opposed to the GBA games, which was more traditional, which I know some people don't particularly care for.
Yeah.
You got any thoughts on that?
The art style, it reminds me sort of like Puzzle Quest a little bit. Kind of where it's kind of a very sort of clean style. It's almost more kind of a stylized anime style rather than something that is...
Doesn't have a lot of artistic kind of flourish to it or detail.
Yeah.
Or...
Like when I think of something like the kind of anime style used in the newest Castlevania games, for instance.
Not the newest ones, because they did away with that for Order of Ecclesia, but yeah, Dawn of Sorrow and Portrait of Ruin.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, I mean, that looks like it's pulled straight out of...
That's getting pretty Saturday morning cartoony kind of anime. Yeah. I mean, I think Fire Emblem's probably a bit not quite all that distance across,
but I think I see
what you mean.
Yep. It's toned down. But yeah, the interesting thing is I realized that I don't think I've ever played a Fire Emblem game.
Oh, you poor bastard. You are in so much pain.
There's probably a good reason, but...
You are in for suffering.
But see, the whole thing is, though, I haven't even... I never played Final Fantasy Tactics or anything like that either.
Oh, God. Why did you do this to yourself, John?
Thinking about why, and the reason is because... I figured it was kind of like don't mix chocolate with my peanut butter kind of thing. Like, I was like, well, if I just want an RPG, I'll just go play an RPG instead of mixing all this strategy kind of stuff. But I'm impressed so far. I mean, it strikes me as the kind of game where, you know, and you see a lot of these on the DS where a game will come out and it'll just completely disappear off the face of the earth kind of thing. Because I just remember, you know, when Shadow Dragon came out, had a very quiet release. Really wasn't really too much.
Got sort of solid reviews, not spectacular.
Yeah. But I mean, it's a really complete package. I mean, it has, you know, I'm assuming it has a very long single player.
Oh yes.
And you know, it has, you know, you can battle other people online. It has voice chat.
You've got voice chat. Yeah. I mean, again, Intelligent Systems, we talked about them a couple of weeks ago at Puzzle League. I mean, they are really on the forefront with how thorough they are with DS stuff.
But yeah, but you can very much tell that it's from an NES game. It's old school, definitely, the way it plays. But yeah, but I'm looking forward to that. I think it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'll come back to that, I'm sure, once you've got into it a bit more. And
then you'll get to rant, John. It'll be great.
Well, I'm expecting it to be very unforgiving.
Oh, yeah. That is the right word, sir.
To say the least. The other game I'm playing is Infamous on PS3. I know Obi talked about it last time.
Yeah, he talked about it pretty briefly. So this game and Prototype have sort of been inextricably linked in my mind, because they're almost always referenced in the same breath when discussed on podcasts and everything. So have you got Prototype, John?
No, I don't have Prototype.
So was there a reason why you went with Infamous over it?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I just figured that I'm always kind of hesitant to get those third-party games that kind of haven't gotten rave reviews, or like kind of like, you know, like just kind of the buzz around Prototype was sort of like, you know, and you know, I knew that Infamous, I figured that, you know, since it was a Sony first-party title, it would probably be better than the average title.
Okay.
You know, it wasn't really...
Yeah, that's a reasonable assumption.
But yeah, so, you know, Infamous, I mean, it's... I think I referred to it as a pastiche game, which is
well played.
It's, you know, open world, but it has a little bit of, you know, kind of God of War in terms of how you can attack enemies and stuff, and you know, you fight, you know, waves of enemies as you're going through the city. It has, you know, the kind of open world feel of, you know, Grand Theft Auto, and you know, you go around and you see somebody standing on a street corner and you go over and they give you a mission. And you can clear out different areas of the city by,
it's like day-to-day life, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. Exactly. I mean, my life, I mean, especially in terms of the superpowers, definitely.
yeah, so that's the thing with this compared to some other open world games. You sort of start with some power over electricity or whatever, and then you can sort of build on your powers. And some of that is related to like choosing between a good path and a bad path.
It's like Crackdown, but replace electricity with steroids, basically.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like it has elements of all these other games like Crackdown, GTA, God of War, all these kind of games. And It does all of them pretty well. The way that now, in terms of increasing your power, the way that works is that as you kill enemies and complete missions and stuff, you gain experience points, and then you can use those experience points to purchase whatever new powers you want. And depending on what they call it, like karmic paths, like either the infamous path or the hero path, whichever path you choose, certain powers unique to those paths open up to you. As you do more in the game, I mean, you have a choice. For example, you have powers that are mirrors of each other. You have one power where you can walk up to somebody who is injured on the ground. One power sucks life from them. The other one heals them. So the more you do that, the more you push in either direction, you become either a hero or you become infamous. And I mean, that's the thing. I mean, with that, yeah, it's kind of cool. I really wouldn't want to overrate it because, I mean, essentially it's just branching paths of the same game, really.
Is it a little bit token, or, you know, does it really feel like there's sort of more meaningful consequences, or is it just like pick one because there isn't really any benefit of being down the middle?
Yeah. Basically, I mean, the way they present it to you is you can do something that can hurt you, right? But it can save a bunch of people. And
oh, F them.
That's the thing, right? You can say, okay, well, I could do this. And the thing is that it actually cuts away from the game, and you're presented with a little cutscene, and he's talking to himself, right?
Oh,
I mean,
don't
get me wrong. It's not corny. It's well done. It doesn't seem forced at all. But
so saving people then, is there any other benefit to saving them aside from, you know, getting your good points or your bad points?
Not really, because I mean, if you go in the other direction, then you start becoming infamous. Karma wise, you can actually switch back, because the thing is, certain powers open up as you, I think there's three different levels of good. Like there's like, you know, champion. Yeah, there's like guardian, champion, and hero. And the thing is, once your karma gets up to say hero, then certain powers unlock. But if you start killing people or whatever, your karma can actually shift back. So you can actually drop in level. So that's what I mean. That's what I mean when I wouldn't say, you know, I wouldn't oversell it and say that it's some deep kind of, you know, experience where you can choose which way you want to choose.
Well, because I guess the issue with that is after a while, there is no choice. Of course, you're going to keep doing the one that you've been doing because it's unambiguously better.
Exactly.
Well, so you can save people, but maybe you can put this in context for me. I mean, you're not saving like your enemies, right? I assume these are like bystanders that like accidentally get caught in the crossfire, and like you know, you heal those people, but then your enemies are still just going to kill and then leave them dead. I mean, I can't imagine that you would like, you know, kill the enemy and then like, okay, now I'm going to resurrect you. Like,
exactly.
Is that something that
you could
do?
You could kill him and resurrect him over and over again.
That was actually a comic, a Penny Arcade comic a couple weeks ago. They did. They had
Live,
Gabe,
die.
Was playing the game. That's exactly what he did. Yeah.
Awesome.
And you do run into a couple of funny things. Like the one time, what happened to me was you have this power called Thundershock, I think. And essentially, if you jump off the roof of something, hit the right combo, and you can unleash you can punch the ground and unleash the shockwave. Well, of course,
nice. I hate the ground.
Well, of course, I did the upgrade, and so I wanted to try this out. And I had actually, my karma had just risen from guardian to champion. And so I was just like
playing
right there.
The good path, everyone. John. Yeah. Upstanding.
It was funny because I was right there on the cusp. Like I had just moved up to champion. And so I jumped off the roof, and I was like, and of course you can jump down onto a car and you can punch it and the whole thing will explode and release a massive shockwave and hit everything within, you know,
just like real life.
300 yards, right? And so I do that and I kill like five bystanders, and my karma immediately drops down. And I'm just like, oh Christ. So,
well, I guess that's kind of interesting that it makes certain ramifications.
Well, you have to watch what you're doing.
You would want to avoid them.
So it's cool in that regard.
So yeah, I'm going to round out this part of new business. Main thing I've been playing, that's the generosity of a friend of mine, actually gave me the copy of Awenden 2, the Japanese DS game. Mm-hmm. So yeah, this is part of a sort of unintentional ongoing rhythm game kick that started with Rhythm Heaven for DS, and then there's been Guitar Hero and now this. And it is the same game as EBA, or the other way around, however you want to look at it. Obviously, Awenden, the original, was first, and then I think the sequel to Awenden in Japan was after EBA came out in the West. But it's not just that the gameplay is exactly the same. There are certain sort of very specific things that are very that are identical. For instance, like, did anyone play EBA here, by the way?
Yes.
Yeah, right. Yeah, do you remember the slow song? Do you remember the sad?
Yeah, the no. Where the background image says, like, the father dying?
Yeah, yeah. That one.
Just like, ah, ha, 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 childless parents.
It's just so crazy in that game. It's just that game is so over the top.
Well, there's one bit in that that's really funny, though, like where they find, like, you remember, like, if you're doing well, you get these little midway bits,
yeah,
where it gives you something like shows how the story is progressing, either well or badly.
Yes.
And if you're doing badly early on in that song about the dead father, they discover pictures of him that he seems to have taken of admiring his own body.
Yes.
And they look disturbed by that. It's
thoroughly inappropriate, really.
Yeah, it's so strange. But I mean, so with this, like, you've got a slow song, you know, exactly the same position in the game, you know, same kind of song. This time it's obviously difficult for me to follow because I don't have any Japanese language skills, but it's sort of like a figure skater, I think, trying to do well, thinking about a dead sister or something like that. So, and then the finale is like all the characters come together and they save the world, and, you know, exactly the same stuff. But, you know, 2.5 years on or whatever it's been, I think that's right. From when I played EBA, I was kind of ready to play again, you know, because I'd really had fun with EBA, and this is the same thing. And I don't really like the soundtrack all that much. I know some people say, you know, they like Oenda a lot more soundtrack-wise. I don't know that I do. Not that I was that huge on the EBA soundtrack, but I don't know, maybe if you're unaccustomed to sort of J-pop or whatever, you just, you know, kind of sound a bit samey. I guess the only other thing about it is just that the situations are very Japanese. Like there's one with three guys controlling a giant robot fighting against a giant cat, but not in a fight. Like, it does brain teasers and like athletic competition.
Oh.
Yeah, it's just so weird.
That
is kind of fun. That not the sort of the. Just how, like, ridiculous and incomprehensible it is really fun. But, yeah, I mean, it's the same game, but, I mean, it appears there will never be an EBA sequel in the West, to be honest.
No.
I don't think it sold as well as they were hoping. And so, you know, if you do want more of this, you can go and import this, you know, with DS is region free and everything.
Well, so then, for the importers then, does that have a lot of Japanese text in it or no?
It does have a lot of Japanese text, as I say. It doesn't impede your ability to play the game at all.
Radical. Cool.
The humor's in the imagery, really.
So, yeah, exactly. I mean, in some ways it might be even funnier, like, sometimes when you just have no idea.
It might be less disturbing.
It
might be the better word for it.
Yeah.
Because, like, if I didn't understand what was going on in the one about the dead father, I would have been able to enjoy it a lot more.
But yeah, I mean, you could still pick up a lot of it. I mean, yeah, you're probably missing out a little bit, but, you know, I mean, it's a music game. I mean, you could totally play it without it. So it's a good choice for an import. And if you think, you know, I'd like to play more of that game, even if it is exactly the same game, just with different songs, then it's a pretty good choice. And the only other thing I did, I downloaded the update to the Nintendo channel for my Japanese Wii.
Oh, that's right.
Which, yeah, I assume will be coming everywhere. Pretty soon. And so, yeah, they've overhauled pretty comprehensively, actually. Like, the interface is quite different. You can, like, have higher quality videos now, which means that when you put it in full screen on a decent sized TV, they don't look terrible.
Standard of perfection. They don't look terrible.
Well, before they were, weren't they? I mean,
they were.
The Nintendo Channel videos are just really poor. So this is definitely a significant improvement in that regard, if not, you know, really outstanding. And, like, the DS demos are more clearly labeled.
Oh, yeah, finding the DS demos was hard before. Yeah, I forgot about
it.
Yeah,
it was, like, hidden, really, which is always kind of bizarre.
Yeah, it was, like, in some menu that, like, you just didn't even
you
think
will
about.
Play no
well, and,
demos.
Of course, for someone like me who lacks Japanese skills, it was all the more impenetrable. Because there are some quite interesting DS demos on the Japanese service, because they will get things way ahead of us sometimes. Not so much right now. I did play a demo for Puyo Puyo 7.
God. Wow. Gee, I wonder what this game's like.
I was really surprised it was numerical. It was like, you've been keeping count? I did play a bit of it's like the Japanese localization of Soul Bubbles. I don't know if you've heard of that DS game.
Yes.
Everyone that's played it seems to think it's really quite good. And it's having played the Japanese version for whatever bizarre reason, I don't think it was on the European Nintendo channel, but I got rid of that when the space crisis was going on, and I never put it
crisis.
Back.
In 2008. A crisis was beginning.
It was a dark time.
Well, it all seems so long ago now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I played that a bit, and it does seem really quite cool, actually. I mean, it's very pretty. It's a sort of 2D game with a few like polygonal elements, but very, very nice looking game, and so got some cool physics. You've got to guide in this bubble through a maze by using the stylus to sort of blow in different directions, and you know, sort of like a puzzle action kind of game. And seems really quite cool, so I think you can get that pretty cheap, probably in various places. It wasn't a big hit in the West when it came out there, so give it a go, probably. I think I might. I was quite impressed with that. And that's it, that's pretty much it. I did get, thanks to Johnny, Retro Game Challenge did show up, so
nice.
Very generous of Johnny to show that. That showed up today. I haven't had a chance to play it yet, so I might talk about that next week. And I expect that Wii Sports Resort will be with me by the time we record next week.
Briefly,
excellent.
I did finally penetrate, after years, this level, only to be greeted by winning by punching a truck. That is the greatest achievement in video game history. Beat a tormenting level by punching a truck.
Good lord. All right, well, before we take a break, I just wanted to go back to Matt, because a big event has taken place. On July the 11th, I think it was the launch of Dragon Quest IX in Japan, which, as we know, is always a sort of Richter scale level event Japan. So the lowdown is it sold over 2.3 million copies in 2 days, besting the previous record for that, which was held by Dragon Quest VIII. It got a 40 out of 40 from Famitsu.
Which is completely predictable.
Not bad.
Well, you say that, but it's the first time that a Dragon Quest game has got one. So that's somewhat interesting, I suppose. Although the 10s are getting somewhat more frequent from
Famitsu. God, how many in the last year we've gotten? What, like 3 of them or something like that?
I think it's something like 3 or 4 in the last 2 years when there's only ever been 10. So
this was 40 of 40. Metal Gear was 40 of 40. There was another big Japanese release that got 40 of 40.
I'm not sure about Smash Brothers.
Yeah, it did, yes. Smash Brothers was 40 out of 40.
Yeah, these days, man, they're just handing them out like, you know, I don't know, candy, man.
They just hand it to you at the airport.
That's what they do, you know. They check your Visa, they check your thumbprint, and then there you go. There's your 40 of 40 right there, man.
Enjoy. Here's your free copy of Famitsu. Have a good day.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think there was also a, was it a new DSi, a red colored DSi that was sort of sold alongside it to some extent, and I guess that. Hell, I mean, look, everyone's already got a DS in Japan,
yeah, like,
right?
Yeah, that matters, but in Japan. Still
they
buy
still,
it.
I think they still like got a nice doubling of the DS hardware sales for that week compared to what it's been selling in other weeks. So they got a little bump out of that as well. So big deal. But Matt, you actually have the game.
Yeah. I wasn't really planning on picking it up originally, although, you know, anywhere you go in Japan, especially, you know, Japan is famous for having convenience stores everywhere. You know, you can walk a block and then you get to a convenience store, you go another block, there's another one. It never fails. That and the vending machines. And so outside of every 7-Eleven in Japan, there's all these flags for Dragon Quest IX. And, you know, it was something like you could pre-purchase it up to, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 days before it came out, and, you know, you'd have your copy ready to go.
Well, there was something like 2 million pre-orders, wasn't there? Like,
set some
crazy record just in that department.
Yep. So I guess, you know, if you look at it from that perspective, you know, yeah, those 2.3 million copies. So you have, you know, 2 million pre-orders, and then, you know, 300,000 copies that people actually, you know, just went out and bought. I happen to be one of those people. I was out in Kansai over the weekend, out in the west side of the country, and I was hanging out with some buddies in Denden Town, which is kind of like Osaka's version of Akihabara, which is, you know, big, you know, video game crazy awesome you know, anime geek land. Wonderful. So I was out there, and we were at the Super Potato, actually. I know you guys did a feature yeah. recently on Super Potato. I was over there, and I was kind of looking at the display, and I was like, well, I probably shouldn't buy anything right now. But I kept looking at it and looking at it. And then eventually me and another friend just broke down and bought it. And so I've been
and
playing
not, it. Not an inexpensive proposition as well. This is a premium price DS game in Japan, isn't it?
Although I got it for, I guess, $10 cheaper. I guess the MSRP was $60 or so. And I got it for, you know, $49 or so, something to that effect.
Yeah, so obviously Famitsu liked it. Some of the impressions that I've read elsewhere on the internet have been pretty favorable to it. How are you feeling about it? But do you have a lot of experience with Dragon Quest before?
No, actually, the first Dragon Quest game I played was the first one on the NES. It was actually back in college, one of my buddies was telling me how awesome it was. And so, I picked it up, and I actually, he told me that you had to get to about level 20 in order to get through the last dungeon. So I got the last dungeon, and I got to level 20, and then something happened, and I just stopped playing the game. So I never beat it, and that's something that really irks me. But, it's a fun game. I haven't played a whole lot of RPGs lately. Just like you, one of my favorite games of all time is Final Fantasy VI. And playing through that recently, it occurred to me that, yes, the Super Nintendo era of video game storytelling wasn't the best. This is pretty cool. The story's pretty cool. You play as this guardian angel for a certain reason, has to come down to the world and, adventure. One thing that's interesting to me is that, I mean, first of all, the main character, it's completely customizable. It's not like a preset character design. It's something that you choose. But then, I actually recently just got to the part in the game where you add more characters to your party, and sure enough, all those characters are just characters, generic characters that you create as well. So, that's the first thing it's the first time I've seen something like that happen in an RPG. I'm used to, having your...
Is that when, you can start doing multiplayer when you add these? Because that's, which is all local, it's not online, but...
Yeah, I haven't gotten a chance to do that yet. I'm hoping to team up with my same buddies that bought it over the weekend with me and play it. But I guess, at least according to Famitsu anyways, it's supposed to be a very revolutionary, multiplayer RPG mechanic, but I haven't had a chance to check it out. Basically, you can join, people in their world. I don't know, I guess you adventure around with them. I don't know if you fight the same battles or what, but I was reading the instruction manual a little bit, and talking about how there's certain things that, like certain chests that, only you can open in your game, but then other people, there's chests that other people, when they come to your game, can open, that kind of thing. So
right, so they're going to kind of encourage you to get other people playing as well, probably with little extra things. And what about the changes to the battle system? Because it's kind of more less random, and sort of visually it looks more kind of sort of active, even though it's still the turn-based, system that it's always been.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you obviously now you can see, the monsters, on the map screen, and you can run away from them, or if you're strong enough, they'll run away from you before, actually fighting them.
Yeah. No, I know there was some sort of concern expressed about that kind of beforehand in terms of, Dragon Quest is relatively not a very progressive series, apparently.
Oh, okay.
But this is relatively
progressive. The only thing that has progressed in that series is just the bust size of the characters, effectively.
Oh, damn.
I don't know. Dragon Quest, they have the character designers... I don't know the person's name, but, it's the person that does, the artwork for, Dragon Ball and all that, right?
Toriyama.
Yeah, he contributed the art style to a bunch of Square and Enix games back in...
Right. Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, Chrono Trigger.
Oh, yeah, Chrono Trigger, good call, yeah. That Toriyama-san, he draws everybody's face the same,
Yes, everybody has the same face.
Yeah.
You will enjoy this face. It is your face.
There are people that enjoy that art style, and that's great. But I guess the only thing that stands out for me when everybody's face looks the same is at least the costuming is different, and that's kind of cool. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of that art style. I'm much more of a fan of, I don't know.
What about the graphics in general? How do you feel they're kind of pushing that on the DS? It's been in development for a long time.
Yeah, it's been a long time, hasn't it? I'm not a good person to ask on that because I haven't played a DS RPG since God, have I ever played another DSRPG?
there's a lot of them to play.
I know, there's a lot of them, I know, but I just, you know, I when I pick up my DS, you know, it's usually Mario Kart or, you know, something quick and, you know, you can jump into like all the Castlevania game. But, yeah.
That's true. I mean, I guess if you were comparing, you'd go with, like, the Final Fantasy remakes.
Right, and in that sense, if that's the case, from what I've seen of, like, the Final Fantasy remakes and stuff, it doesn't strike me as something that looks incredibly better. I mean, I suppose incrementally better, yeah.
It's a bit more, like, colorful.
Yeah, that's definitely, yeah. The colors are real beautiful. And, you know, like, basically, as you're walking around town or outside, you know, it cycles through day and night, so, you know, it looks kind of cool to see, you know, the effects on the land.
Yeah,
and
the lighting, you know? Effects change and everything.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, it doesn't look, you know, a whole lot better or anything. I mean, for instance, you know, everyone's, I guess, in order to compensate for the amount of polygons the DS can push out, like, everybody's arms are like these, I don't know, it's hard to explain, but basically there's no, like, hand. You don't see a hand so much. It's just this kind of, like...
Stump.
Stump is exactly what it is, yes. It's a stump. Exactly.
Perfect. I like it.
Yeah, I hear they use some, like, sprites to pad things out in certain areas, like in the towns
exactly.
And stuff.
See, I don't have any problem with that if it looks good.
Yeah, sometimes mixing the two can
be
kind of dangerous. You think like Mario 64 and some of those sprite elements that were kind of put in alongside right. The polygonal stuff, and it did look kind of awkward. But I mean, on a smaller portable screen, maybe it kind of blends together
better. And for an RPG too, I mean, it seems to me that all of the backgrounds and everything are 3D, but then the characters, certain characters are 3D, but then certain ones are sprites. And that struck me as soon as I turned the game on. And they have this introduction thing, and in the first town, you know, in the first characters you see a couple 3D characters walking, and then you see like an NPC that's like just a sprite. It doesn't, you know, detract from anything, but that is something that I noticed.
If I meant to call that revolutionary, by the way.
I guess it's the only way to populate the towns on DS, I guess. Because, I mean, that's one thing I noticed. Final Fantasy IV, the towns are not very populous. Okay. They don't feel, you know, they do feel kind of sparse, so I don't know whether that was kind of their only option there. It's interesting. It's pretty huge news, to say the least, over there. And I guess, well, we're only a few weeks away from the next big, like, hardware pusher, which is going to be Monster Hunter 3.
Yep. August 1st, yeah.
Yeah, of course, they're pushing that with the Black Wii bundle and everything. I mean, I think that could do a lot for Wii sales.
Very badly.
Yes, do want.
It's so beautiful.
I know.
I guess that Black Wii isn't coming out in America, so...
Nintendo,
I hate you. I loved you, and then I hate you.
Have you seen the Black Wii's package?
No, it does look very nice. Cool.
I don't mean the actual box it comes in. Box is sexy.
It's all black. You know, they're just flipping it. It looks lovely. But I guess the point, one of the reasons why they're not gonna be doing it so much in the US is because Wii sales, hardware sales, are relatively more robust in the US right now. I mean, Wii sales have sank quite low in Japan, and are still sort of above the PS3. But we did actually get the MPDs for June in just before recording, and Wii in the last month sold 360,000 units.
Oh, just a few.
So. Somewhat above, you know, sort of about 50% in excess of 360 at 240,000. So, you know, pretty good lead over the next closest console competitor. And the DS, really remarkable, 766,000 units.
What came out?
I mean, household pets are buying them now.
I mean, there's always good games coming out for the DS,
yeah,
and
I know,
simultaneously,
but...
there's not necessarily like something huge. That is a really, really impressive figure considering the economy and, you know, the performance of the other systems. I think the 360 was the only one that didn't see a significant year-on-year drop, although I think that we still do pretty well under the circumstances.
Yeah, and in 360's case, it had already hit its sort of cruising numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't so remarkably high last year. Yeah, it, to compare it to. And then on the software side, a number of Wii titles in the top 10. Usual suspects, you had Mario Kart in there at number 8 with 200,000 units of that. Then you've got Wii Fit a little bit above that with 270,000 units. Tiger apparently had its best launch like ever by a factor of 2 or something, selling 272,000 units on the Wii. And probably, you know, quite a lot off the chart for the other formats as well. And then EA Sports Active was at number 3. 290,000, so I guess that's probably going to be a new perennial figure in the chart as well, isn't it? Much like Wii Fit.
Mm-hmm.
And then Prototype was number one for the 360 with 420,000 units, which is not very high for a number one.
No, that's a slow month.
Pretty low, yeah.
That is not very high for a number one at all. But at the bottom, the aforementioned infamous 190,000 is actually quite high for a number 10.
Yeah.
So a condensed chart, and obviously some people may note that there is no appearance of the Conduit in that chart, but it was only on sale for 7 days in that month, and it, like I said, the threshold for the top 10 is actually quite high, and so we haven't seen the, as we record, we haven't seen the format specific charts to see if it cracked that, which I guess will be more revealing on that. So, you know, no need to pronounce any doom for the Conduit based on that, if that's something you care about, I suppose.
You lose before you even started.
That's it now, is it? That's all you
need. Well, ironically enough, before it's even started, it's already lost.
Well, nice. Well, on that note, we're going to go to a break now. When we come back, we're going to wrap up the Ninja Spirit retroactive.
Oh, God.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
I'll be back later, guys.
You too?
It's just going to be great. Craig's
it is not
going
to be especially long. You could stick around. And then we're going to get to answer more of your listener mail questions. So join us for that. And we're back, and we're going to start off with a quick little wrap-up on the retroactive number 7.
Oh, this won't be quick.
It will be quick. So, yeah, so Ninja Spirit, not the most substantial game.
Worst game for retroactive ever.
All right, we could get into that a bit later, but for now, suffice to say, you know, Johnny tried to express some optimism that perhaps the participation would increase in the subsequent week between episodes. It didn't really. We don't have a lot more feedback.
And there was a vote for this game, right? Somebody voted.
Oh, yeah, it won. That's it. People didn't put their money where their mouth was.
I was going to say, you should hold these people accountable, man. Like, you know,
I agree.
Ban them from forums. You know.
Well, next week, Choaniki. I mean, screw everybody.
That's right.
John is going to take emergency powers on to suspend retroactive democracy and replace it with Choaniki-ocracy.
The Chonocracy.
A homoracracy? Oh, God. Yeah. I can't even say it.
Homoeroticacy?
Homoerocracy, I guess.
Forget that for a minute. We've got to get through. I do want to clean up a few things on this. First of all, Matt was good enough to download and play the game for us.
You poor bastard.
Yeah.
I can't help it. I'm a masochist in Japan. Everybody would call me Do.
It's terrible the power we exert over our guests, apparently. So I should definitely wish to get his perspective on it. So you played pretty close to the end, right?
I guess so. I picked it up and played it for about an hour. And
you basically beat the game, then.
Well, I got pretty much, yeah. I'm sixth level. I got the sixth level, and I was just, during the break, I was just talking to you guys, and you informed me that if I hit select, I can switch the weapons, which I was completely unaware of.
One of our posters last week sort of expressed a similar sentiment. I don't think he got quite as far into the game as you did before discovering it, but
I don't know. I mean, you know, obviously, like, the AI is very, like, you know, NES Kung Fu-ish, you know, the guys.
Yeah, they're just running into you, pretty much.
Yeah, they stop if you continue to walk, they stop just short of actually hitting you. So basically, you know, if you jump over enemies, you can essentially just keep going and never get hit if you're good enough for the jumps. But I actually kind of liked what they did with the normal attack. Basically, anywhere, you know, if you're facing right and you hit the attack button, pretty much anywhere from, you know, right above the guy to, you know, in front of him is in the hit radius, so you're able to kill enemies. I guess that's a decent way to compensate for the fact that it's a shitty old game.
It's a feature!
Well, because also, like, when you're in the air or something, like, you can swing above you to either side, to the bottom, and it casts a pretty wide sort of shield if you're blocking stuff, which I guess the main reason for that, as we discussed last week, is that in the original arcade mode, one hit would kill you.
Right,
so
right.
for the game to be in any sense balanced, you would have to be able to block things pretty effectively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Although, I mean, to be fair, I almost never got hit during the stages anyways. It wasn't until the bosses that, you know, I would get hit.
And then you die in one hit on those guys.
It's pretty much not much different from the arcade anyways, more or less.
No, it's true. We kind of talked about that too, that sometimes the differences sort of in practice end up being a bit trivial. So, yeah, I mean, would you say you enjoyed it, though? I mean, it's very short.
It definitely wasn't worth the $6.
There is
time,
a wrong answer, by the way.
I don't know. I mean, I'm a fan of these old school games. So, you know, it's not that I'm sitting here going, God, I can't believe I wasted my money on that. But, you know, I mean, for what it is, for, you know, being an old TurboGrafx-16 game, you know, one that I never got a chance to play, it's okay. I mean, I can dig it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's not unentertaining for me, but it's certainly not great. I mean, one bit what I've got done since last week is I played the final level, which is the one, you know, the seventh, so just beyond where you've got to. And I mean, it's very short. There's not much to it, so you have almost seen everything.
Well, yeah, if you can get to the level before the last level within an hour.
There's an incredible, preposterously cheap segment in the final level, which is just which is like the absolute pinnacle of ridiculous quarter munching in the arcade. Like, so you get to these sort of like, you get to a checkpoint, which is just after a pretty brief sort of bit where you just go from left to right with like enemies sort of appearing out of the floor, basically, which is not very difficult at all. And so you get to this bit and you're just dropping into a pit, and there's like a, I don't know how to describe it, like a fleet of enemies with their swords held up in the air, and you're basically just dropping and trying to sort of navigate through this when, you know, one touch and you're dead. Mm-hmm. And the way you can't really react fast enough with any kind of dependability to avoid it. So to a large extent, in my experience, it was just kind of potluck. I just tried it enough times that eventually I kind of got a bit lucky, made a few quick little moves, and, you know, I dropped to the bottom, and then there's the last boss. And it's just like, it just seems like that exists for, you know, it's not really skill based or any, it exists solely just to like people like, I must be near to the end, let me just keep shoveling money into this thing.
Let's be honest.
Yeah, oh yeah.
That was the first thing I said, this is the epitome of a quarter muncher, and you can tell that it's basically
that moment is like the sort of real epitome of that in itself. So it's, yeah, I mean, that not a great film. The last boss is actually kind of decent, one of the better ones. It has attacks which are not like one hit kills, but it's like pretty easy to get hit by them. So it's a bit more. It's not as binary as the other boss battles, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
there's a bit more of a kind of a back and forth to it.
So it's not basically just jump hit, jump hit, jump hit, jump hit.
No, not quite, because it sends out these green sort of rays after you. So like, if you can, sometimes you need to like misdirect them. So if you can like jump up really high, they start going high, then you can kind of run in underneath them and start attacking it, for instance. Yeah, things like that. It definitely plays better than some of the other ones, but yeah. This is not something that's particularly great. Did you get any further, James?
Well, I tried. It's funny you mentioned that, because at one point playing this game, this has never happened before, I fell asleep while actively playing this game.
So you said actively, because I guess what SimCity Societies or whatever is doesn't count.
That was more like watching.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm glad you put they made a crucial distinction.
Yes. So
Did you fall asleep in such a way that your thumb was still pressing right?
I hope so.
You may have made progress.
You may have
actually beaten the game in my sleep, yes. This game, it just doesn't do it for me. I mean, there's nothing particularly appealing about it, and there's a ton of other games that have done it better. I'm not sure what value this game has historically.
All right, I guess we should say, you know, I don't know whether it was just a case of people hadn't played it very much or whatever last week, or maybe they didn't want to discourage subsequent participation by other people in there, but now that this is all coming to an end, I am declaring an amnesty on anyone that wants to absolutely kill this game.
John, you first.
Well, that was the whole thing. It's like, seldom do I come across a game where I have such little reaction to it. I mean, I think James and I actually talked about this, I think, after the podcast last week.
We did, yes.
We just didn't really have anything to really say about it. It's like, okay, it's
perfect discussion material.
It's yeah, and I think, and you know what? I think the forum thread actually reflects that, because nobody else has.
Oh,
really,
it does. It
really
does. I mean, the participation in the forum, we talked about, the participation in the forum thread for this retro, vastly, vastly quieter than any of the previous ones, even something as apparently sort of disgusting as Super Calls and Ghosts actually engendered more play from people. So I guess you can't really argue. It just is not something that provokes a lot of thought or comment from people.
No.
Furthermore, it really wasn't. The thing is, I don't think this game was really even influential.
No, I mean, it couldn't be, because otherwise I would have fallen asleep playing many other games.
Yeah.
I think what John and I agreed on is that we would have rather played a really bad game.
Yeah.
Than
something that provoked the reaction.
Yeah, like we agreed that our next retroactive is going to be China Warrior.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God. How long can you... James, in terms of sustaining a discussion on that, how long can you say an expletive for?
Well, that's... you could probably make one up, you know? I mean, you could just make a new word. But the thing is though, what we were thinking, and you know, I'll throw this out to our reader base. You know, I was thinking that one of the themes, I mean, we've had a TurboGrafx-16 week. What about having a game where we could find the biggest sprites used?
that we could find
China Warrior being one of them.
I sense that this might be rigged in some way.
Would those Neo Geo games count?
Yeah.
Those Neo Geo games where they zoom in?
They all count.
Absolutely.
For a game, man.
Maybe we could follow up Ninja Spirit with Ninja Combat. That would be wonderful.
Yeah. That's the theme too. The worst names. Ninja Warrior or Ninja Combat? Yeah, that's right up there.
They are both pretty bad.
Air Zonk. Arizona could also be in there.
Oh, come on. You know, it's like Bonk, but futuristic. Evidently, you get Zonk.
Bonk 2.0. I mean, basically what we agreed on was that it was hard for us to discuss this game in a meaningful fashion because,
It's very shallow.
It's very shallow. It's pretty bland, and it's true,
and that was reflected in the forums. I do want to go through some more of these forum posts of the people that were good enough to participate and give their thoughts on the game, but apparently it was very difficult to do so. We certainly appreciate the effort.
Requires thoughts first.
So the first one is from Gojira. And he says, I came into this game kind of expecting a lot. I'm a big fan of what Irem did back in the day. I love R-Type, and Metal Storm on the NES is my favorite game from that system, which is pretty bold, strong statement, since some of the great NES games. I'm also a huge sucker for hidden gem-type games. But unlike R-Type and Metal Storm, I really felt the controls in Ninja Spirit left a lot to be desired. There are parts of the game that are totally kick-ass. I had a lot of fun with the level where there are kite guys coming at you from the sky, which I think, Matt, is the level that you've got to. Is that right?
Oh, okay. I'm not sure. I haven't seen the kite guys yet, but it's the level where you run through the level and suddenly there's enemies that look like you. There's that same kind of samurai looking type of guy coming at you, and then knives come at you from every direction all at once.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that is that level. So, and he said something clicked about that level where I was jumping around shooting enemies left and right, and it felt very good. Maybe going back to the earlier levels would be more fun, having now gained knowledge of how to play the game better.
Well, and Gojira brought up an interesting point. He was talking about Metal Storm, right? Didn't that have a similar kind of mechanic, that anti-gravity mechanic, where I think it was in level 4 or 5 in this game, where when you jump,
stick to the ceiling.
You go to the ceiling.
That was a bit like Mario Galaxy, like those bits in Mario Galaxy where it changes.
Except not fun.
I haven't played Metal Storm to know whether it's fun.
I'm pretty sure that Metal Storm had that same mechanic, so perhaps this was, mechanic.
It makes more sense in Metal Storm, since,
okay.
it's a piece of mecha.
Yeah, I guess so. So, you're right about that. That's quite, it sticks out in this, because it's the only time they really do anything like that, in that level.
Yeah, that's true.
I think that's the fourth level, where you stick to the ceiling.
Well, they had to do something to mix it up, I guess, and they put
that in there. I commend them for mixing it up a little bit. But I wouldn't say that really going back earlier on helps, like, after you sort of learned a bit more about how to play, because you just don't have to earlier on, you know what I mean?
It's just not, no point.
It's just not challenging enough. It's not like the enemy sort of patterns and, you know, is not sophisticated enough to really yield anything from that. So, yeah, I mean, it didn't work that way for me anyway. I mean, what I did sort of after I beat the last boss is I just, because I said last week I used the sword pretty much exclusively, mm-hmm. with a few exceptions, just because I felt the game felt more balanced that way. And then I kind of investigated with the other weapons, and definitely that is the case. I mean, the bombs are kind of ludicrously overpowered if you use them a lot.
Yeah.
It is kind of farcical, to be honest.
Like, I first found that out against the one hit kill sword boss. You know, I was getting killed over and over and over again, and all of a sudden I switched to the bombs, killed him in 3 seconds flat. And I was like, okay.
You don't even have to upgrade it very much to get to that point, do you? I mean, it's just, how can it be so unbalanced? I don't understand.
Yep.
It really undermines the game design as well. You know, for instance, that level, that sixth level that Adadad was, the Gojira was referring to, if you have the bombs on that level upgraded, it's just, you know, you've got all these sort of patterns of enemies that can be quite challenging to negotiate with the sword. You just walk through them. Mm-hmm. With the bombs.
Yep.
I mean, it just reduces the game to a walk in the park.
Yeah, basically.
Pretty much, literally.
Which is exactly what I want in my games, actually.
Yeah. So, I mean, so now we are going to come to the very, very important that we did kind of mention off air that Adadad brought up in the thread. So I'm going to go to his description for this because it's very evocative. I just wanted to mention the fantastic opening to the game, the defining part of the game for me, the minimalist main menu with the slightly eerie music. Press run, and therein lies a cutscene of epic proportions. The music slowly fading as the piss street lightning closes in on our hero, and from nowhere, a lone wolf rushes onto the scene, pauses for a second along with the music, when suddenly the ear-splitting, crackly sound of having a lobotomy. So, yeah, this is the opening to the game. When I saw it, I was completely befuddled.
Yeah,
I had no idea what the hell was going on.
And in retrospect, it still doesn't make sense.
Well, yeah. I read the manual, and what it says is that you are having a dream about being a wolf witnessing your father's death.
Oh, good. Perfect.
Mm.
Of course. I mean, you know, when you think
about
it.
How did we not figure that out?
That's not abstract at all.
I'll have to show this to a Japanese person today and ask them if they understand it and see if I can get any kind of explanation.
Yeah. Oh yes, I often have this dream. Oh,
so
yes, you see, in Japan, we often dream we are white wolves with terribly done howls.
Watching our father be killed. Exactly.
Our voice boxes are very scratchy sounding. But so he goes on that the howler mentioned is, of course, fantastic, but hourly and in most other areas, Ninja Spirit leaves plenty to be desired. As far as I'm concerned, the game can be breezed through simply by using the bombs all the time while hitting fire and making small jump continuously while holding right on the D-pad. It's not just that the bosses are unmemorable, but it's the sheer lack of level design, the reckless behaviour-inducing life number, and perhaps it is my fault for not challenging myself to take on a higher challenge on the arcade mode, but as it stands, I wish I'd been bothered to vote in the poll for Choaniki. So,
I told you all. Did you know, Johnny should let us take our votes and make the last votes, you know?
Yeah.
Well, this is funny, actually, because after that point in the retroactive thread and the forums, the only other posts pretty much are arguing over who is to blame for we have this.
You know,
that's
what?
Always
they're
sharp pointy
all
fingers.
To blame. Everybody but John and I who voted for Choaniki is to blame.
Yep, I agree.
Well, I did. I voted for Bonk. Which was also extremely close.
You are the Ross Perot of this voting.
Awesome. I'm not going to divulge figures, but it got way more percentage of the vote than Ross Perot. Certainly far more than Ralph Nader.
Yeah.
You know. I think Military Madness is the Ralph Nader in this one. So basically, this was not an ideal game, I think, for our retroactive feature, unfortunately. I'm not sure that this was the case on this occasion, but I will just say it's probably a good time to say that, you know, these polls are not referenda on whether you like a game, but whether you would like it to be discussed and replayed by yourself and others. Because as clear, I mean, I don't hate this game by any means. I think there's more antipathy from other people towards this game than there is for me. But yeah. I'll readily concede it's just not particularly suitable for this because it's so short
about,
and it is insubstantial. It's just sort of flimsy. It's just an old arcade game. So that's going to wrap it up for this retroactive. Although Johnny is accepting nominations in the forum primarily around Super NES titles because that is going to be the next format specific poll that he's looking at. So if you've got any ideas for that, certainly that would be very welcome.
You know, for the next one, I think we should just take the power out of the forum goers' hands because obviously they're just drunk with power. I mean, it just kind of burns me because, you know, because of this dog of a game, there is a certain game that has been put on the shelf permanently that does not deserve it. And that may very well resurface at some point in the future.
John,
you'll always have your memories.
John, are we at the stage of walkout to get this game back in?
I'm just saying, there may be a hunger strike involved. Right? Now, I'm not going to tell you what I'm not going to eat, but let me just say.
I knew it was going to happen. It's like being in audio slow motion. I can just feel it coming towards me.
This is terrible. This is awful radio, and our guest is just sitting there dumbfounded.
Agreed.
Well, that's so. It's always a bad sign when at the end of a retroactive you are lamenting Choaniki.
Yes,
so,
true.
That is going to close the book on it. Well, we're going to get onto the listener mail. So, James, you've got the first one.
All right. So, David or Kraken613 writes, "We need a clarification to Lindy's statement about playing me online in the conduit. He only said that I would go up to him and kill him, but in fact, I would kill him 6 to 7 times before he killed me. He needs to get some skills." I'm not reading that next phrase. Also, he said that the WeSpeak echoed a lot. It does. But Stratos has a solution to this. He put on headphones and wrapped the WeSpeak around... What? And wrapped the WeSpeak around his headphones. It was clear and no echo. Also, just move WeSpeak away from the TV and close to you works really well, too. I personally would much rather have a headset than a WeSpeak. I actually don't have my WeSpeak yet. I'm buying one next week, so maybe my opinion will change once I have one. Well, I have to say, there is one thing about his opinion that might change it, and that would be the fantastic WeSpeak channel. Which is the pinnacle of gaming, non-gaming entertainment.
I certainly want to see PictoChat integrated somehow into the WeSpeak channel. I think that would be possibly a killer app, if you will.
I think that would be a tragedy.
As per John's presence or lack of skills, I can say that with a certain amount of definitive experience that nobody in that game, in this group, could aim worth shit. So
we've gathered this.
It is quite plausible that Kraken walked up to John and killed him 6 or 7 times.
Oh yeah.
So are the controls in the conduit that counterintuitive then?
No, we just sucked.
Yeah, just inept, apparently.
It's definitely tough. I mean, the one thing I will say about the controls is that, you know, normally like when you're controlling with dual analog, because you're moving along basically two different axes, so you can kind of predict your turning, but it's harder to do that in the conduit because your controls are free floating.
Yeah, right, so right. You end up your shots end up sailing in some direction or another a lot.
Yeah,
and it's not because of the controls; it's just because it's a different experience, really.
Yeah,
not as a custom. Yeah, because a lot of people have been playing you know, dual analog FPSs for a very long time now. You know, and they obviously there are differences between games, but they share such a great degree of commonality.
Mm-hmm. I just can't imagine how we used to play single analog FPSs. I mean,
with a hell of a lot of auto aim. I think is
I think it had to be. I mean, it seems kind of funny now.
No, I mean, like GoldenEye and Perfect Dark had pretty immense auto aim.
Well, yeah, it did. And the PSP is, you know, an example of why this doesn't really work anymore.
The PSP is retarded. I mean, they have you control the camera with the face buttons. It's perfect. So stupid.
Well, we say that, but the N64 had face buttons devoted to the camera.
True.
Yeah, the C buttons.
I mean, they were there, but there were also other face buttons that weren't devoted to the camera, unlike the PSP where they're just there. That is their job now. Well, to get to the WeSpeak, the WeSpeak does echo a lot, and it was a stupid design. I shouldn't have to put on headphones to use my TV. Yeah. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, because putting on headphones is somewhat counter to the whole point of WeSpeak, isn't it?
Exactly. That's exactly.
So that isn't an ideal sort of solution. I don't know about. I've never had the WeSpeak like that close to me. Relatively, I don't remember when my experience with it was very, very echoey. Also,
yeah.
So I haven't tried to remedy that, but I don't know that I would be desperate to do it with headphones.
Yeah. See, I know they suggest putting the WeSpeak on top of the sensor bar, but I actually put mine on my coffee table, which is about, 6 feet from the TV.
So it's closer to you than to the TV.
Yeah, that's what I do as well.
So I'm basically stretching the cable out to its maximum length.
Aside from Animal Crossing and The Conduit, are there any other games that have supported WeSpeak?
No, I don't think so.
So there's only two games that have supported this peripheral, is what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's accurate.
That's
honestly
awful.
Mm-hmm. No, well, the Endless Ocean 2 is coming, I think, in September in Japan. That's supposedly going to have it. But and I assume some of High Voltage's subsequent games will have it. But this, even now, in terms of just games in development, you couldn't name that many.
So really, Nintendo will have two games, and then these guys will have two games. That's it.
Yep.
Yeah. So
Nintendo's never done that with a peripheral before. It's not like
they were left it to die.
The bongos had more official games than the WeSpeak.
Well, they had the three Donkey Kongas in Japan.
Yeah, and
so,
I'm going to remind everyone that if you didn't do it yet, WeSpeak Channel Night, do it.
Yeah, do it.
Like,
is that gonna be Wi-Fi night for the next one?
That would be a disaster.
Let's just talk to each other. This can't possibly end badly.
Let's poke each other's heads. That's the best part of it. Is just to poke their heads.
I've never heard the WeSpeak channel. So is that just like a giant chat room or what? What's the deal?
No,
with that?
It's like a tiny chat room.
Mm-hmm. It's a four person chat room.
So, but
well, it could be
is,
more people if you had them in the same room, but it's four ways.
Your Miis show up on the screen, and you can talk to each other, you can show each other pictures. But the defining feature is that if you click somebody's head, it gets big and small mm-hmm. on everybody's screen, which basically just devolved into us clicking Johnny's head as fast as we could while he talked. Our Miis looked up at him like he was some glowing god.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. When one person talks, so you'll have three heads on the screen, sort of like this weird Brady Bunch opening sequence.
Triangle.
And the thing is, the heads will look at whoever's talking. So it's really strange.
It's this very strange moment where they shift their vision up. It's very surreal.
Well, we're going to move on to the next question. John, you've got this one.
Okay, Brandon 548 writes, I'm a huge Mario Party fan and would look forward to the yearly release of a new Mario Party. There is now a 2-year absence since Mario Party 8, and I thought that this year's E3 would definitely show at least one new Mario Party, if not two, counting the DS. But nothing was shown or mentioned. None of the media seemed to care or even ask Nintendo reps about it. I guess that's because Mario Party is considered too casual or family-friendly. Can you guys help me out and give me your best guess on why no Mario Party, and is the series done?
Well, this is profoundly shocking to me, don't you think? I mean, what, it seemed like it was free money every year.
Well,
yeah.
It's
like Madden.
See, the situation is thus. Nintendo didn't make these games, and they had no desire to make these games. Hudson produced these games. And my guess is that Hudson is erstwhile engaged or just simply incapable of producing the titles at the moment.
Well, he's making a lot of games for Wii. It's not dissimilar games in some cases, and just a bunch of other stuff aside, lots of downloadable stuff. But you'd just think somehow there would be, these games. I mean, Mario Party 8, which really didn't. I mean, it seemed like it was like pretty much a it wasn't really with the Wii in mind all that much.
No, I don't think it was GameCube.
I mean, it didn't have proper widescreen even. They faked that. And then apparently the controller implementation with the Wii was really kind of crude. So you would think, they would like to do one for Wii, and you just think, well, there'd be too much money in it for everyone, Hudson included, and Nintendo, of course. Yeah, but 8 sold like well over a million copies. So you just think you're turning down easy money here. I find it absolutely amazing. And then you think, well, you know, after 1 year's absence, you think, well, maybe, you know, time to take a year off and maybe come back and do something that's more specific to Wii, shake things up a bit. But now it's been two. I mean, you do start to wonder whether, you know, something, for whatever reason, that relationship with Hudson has broken down and they're just not going to do it. It's kind of bizarre.
Yeah, or maybe just Hudson, maybe they're more interested in making WiiWare games.
What about, what if it was they did that for WiiWare and then did DLC other minigames, mm-hmm, and levels?
There's plenty of potential for doing it, you know, through like a downloadable platform and just doing it online. You know, I mean, Wii Speak, I would have thought, would be quite good for this sort of thing because
that was my star.
Well, you know, you could have kind of like, you could have like sort of family versus family play or something.
Yeah.
You know, like so it's almost like a Family Feud type thing, but on Mario Party or something that kind of makes sense.
Why are we not in game design? Honestly.
So we sort of rationalize the fact that the Wii Speak is a communal voice chat.
We're so much better at this.
You know what I mean? Because that's the main value in Wii Speak is the idea it's communal voice chat.
Yeah, I mean, like, what if you could do it where each on-screen player on the board represents a family, and that when you get to the mini game, it actually tells you, "All right, so and so is going to play this game."
Mm-hmm. You could do. Yeah, but there's so much potential, you know, and this you would think, especially with the kinds of people that actually own a Wii now, that, you know, that it's a huge market to sell to, and they're just turning it down. I mean,
there's really nothing you can even really rationalize to make it make sense.
It's one of the most puzzling things, and Brandon 548, you know, makes an interesting point that, you know, it does seem like for the most of the gaming media, it seems like they would just prefer that this doesn't go on, so they don't say anything about the fact that it doesn't.
That's not true, because I know that at E3 it was mentioned.
Really?
Well, not like there wasn't like a major question, but I heard
when you were sort of dealing with it from remote, like me, you didn't, you know, there wasn't.
Yeah, I mean,
much...
it wasn't like somebody came up, where's Mario Party? But it was more, you know, conversations on the side. And
yeah, like... sure. I mean, I can imagine that, but no, yeah, it doesn't seem like anyone's like as openly sort of baffled.
I think what happened is that it became somewhat like Death and Taxes.
Yeah. It's really a non-story at this point. I mean, because it comes out every year.
But that's the point. It's the reverse is that it is a big story
its
when it
is. Presence was so just, you know, almost ignored simply by the fact that it was already there, that its lack of presence wasn't noted simply because they just weren't paying attention.
It just faded into the wallpaper.
Yes.
Essentially, yeah. It's like, well, it's not there anymore, but you have to almost be told, hey, it's not there.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, and you know, it is quite surprising. As I said, you know, I mean, it had expanded into the DS as well, which is the last game to have come out in the Mario Party series, actually. It was the DS1 at the end of 2007. So it's kind of a very, very odd situation. I you have to think at some point, whether it's with Hudson or someone else, they will come back to this.
Oh, yeah, they have to.
I know they're especially big hits in Japan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they don't do badly here, and they don't cost anything to make.
No, and Nintendo's sort of Japan-centric focus, you think that will probably
help it. Part of the issue here is that also that the Wii theme, so just calling something Wii something, and has overtaken in Nintendo's eyes calling something Mario something.
Well, it may well have done, but it didn't stop the, you know, that was just as true when Mario Party 8 did as well as it did.
Well, yeah, but I think it's even more reinforced.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I mean, you know, you've had Wii Fit. And,
yeah,
you know,
so I mean, like, what do? Do they do Wii Party? I mean, or...
Well, I think you've got a brand. That's the thing. It's just too dependable to mess with, I think. I mean, I will say, I mean, obviously the space is crowded. Now, more so than it was on the GameCube, because there are so many of this general kind of game on Wii. You know, it's sort of probably the primary shovelware genre.
Yeah, it is, definitely.
But the fact the Mario name distances it above all that.
Here's an idea. Maybe Nintendo is
in the market,
leaving that space open to people like Carnival Games, because, you know, they can say, well,
but
look.
You know, it just seems to me to be a very curious thing for a company like Nintendo to say, oh no, we don't want that money, you can
because they still get money on these games, and
well, but they're not getting the same kind of revenue as if they publish
it. Yeah, I guess.
I mean, you know,
really...
it's a big is a big difference.
Like, I know that we criticize the Mario Party games later in their life. We're like, well, these things are stupid. But the reality of the situation is, it was a fun game when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And with the exception of the one that used the microphone, I think all those games as they came out, if they were the initial game in the series, you'd think, wow, this game's really fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's even worse than Madden Complex, I think, because it literally was the same game.
Yeah.
You know, Madden tries to tweak some element of the game pretty heavily, and that's the new featured gameplay mechanics. This is the same game, literally.
That's the thing. I mean, it would be healthy for it to maybe take a break and come back more different, I'm surprised. I feel similarly to Brandon, who wrote in, I thought it would be this year, but especially because you look at the second half schedule, it's not that dense. You think, you slot this in somewhere, but apparently not. So it's genuinely curious. I'll move on to the next letter. This Sophia writes, I want to give a shout out to Jungle Speed, a game that's been extremely overlooked, but everyone I know that's played it loved it for its production values and the core gameplay. So this is a WiiWare game. It's a card game, actually. Pretty much straight up replication of an actual card game that sort of requires reflexes.
It's a card game, but it's called Jungle Speed.
Yeah, I'm actually striking to not talk about this, so sorry guys, well, I gotta withdraw from this one.
Like my mind just
your mind was blown by the fact that card game is called Jungle Speed. It is kind of strange.
Like, neither of those words mesh with a card game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some circuitous reason for that. But yeah. Anyway, so she has two questions. Seventh retroactive game wrapping up. What are your highlights and lowlights so far with the seven games? Biggest disappointment? Biggest surprise? Well, yes. I don't know whether I'd characterize Ninja Spirit as a total disappointment, because I wasn't expecting anything that different, although I didn't have the most sort of detailed expectations for it. But yeah, I mean, that's definitely been the weakest in terms of the sort of participation that we've had from the forums and all that sort of thing.
And just in terms of depth of discussion, really.
Yeah, there's just not too much there, as we've talked about. But I mean, on the flip side, favourites for you guys that we've done so far after seven games?
Oh God, I can't even remember all the games we've done.
Yeah.
Well, you've got Dynamite Heady, we started off with. There's Luigi's Mansion, Eternal Darkness, Secret of Mana, Super Ghouls and Go, Zelda 2, and then Ninja Spirit.
Wow, I've only won one vote the entire time we've been doing this. Super Ghouls and Ghost.
I would say, I mean, for me, definitely Eternal Darkness was a high point. I mean, I'm really glad that everybody really got to experience that, because I think it's one of those games that everybody should play, just because it's so good.
For me, it was, it was the first time that I'd played it really in depth. I mean, I'd played it before and I picked up a copy for cheap, but just hadn't got round to it, mm-hmm. So it was really nice that was the impetus for it, and I enjoyed it, and we had really good discussions with really good participation. It's one of these games, it's quite a provocative kind of game. It gets people talking. A lot of people have memories from the time, it was sort of a quite impactful game at the time for people that did buy it back then on the GameCube, but also it's remained interesting since. So, I mean, that was really a lot of fun to do, and just pretty much the ideal kind of game.
Well, the thing is, I mean, there's plenty of good games, but I mean, I think it actually does a lot of interesting things. Like, it does a lot of things differently from most games out there, even games of its type that kind of tell like a narrative sort of horror story. It's really unique. I mean, I really haven't seen a game that's exactly like it ever since.
Yeah, I mean, it does things. And it does things that we can talk about, really. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, it's just things that are kind of unique and sort of more unorthodox in some cases, and just more remarkable. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the literal sense. Any other picks from you guys?
I'm gonna go with what the Super Ghouls and Ghosts, because I mean, I know that discussion wasn't great on that game. I was just shocked at how many people just hated it.
Yeah. I mean,
I just regarded it, but
to be fair, the people that did, there were a number of people that played it. So even some people that didn't enjoy it did, pick it up. They weren't just going by memory. They did play it.
I appreciate that they really worked through the game, and I understand that it's not an easy game.
Mm-mm.
But I was just surprised at how it didn't seem like we were going to get that kind of reaction. Might be the word for it.
Well, I mean, it was an unexpected for me, but I think that's some of what made it a good discussion game, was because it was contentious. I mean, that I think was something that is not all that often the case with something that at least some people think is really good, you know. So I think it was really good in that sense. It was definitely fun to do.
Yeah,
to talk about. I mean, we had fun with it, didn't we?
I mean, of course, it doesn't hurt that I love the game, but
mm-hmm. It's an awesome game. Although there are so many different versions of Ghouls and Ghosts on the Virtual Console now, aren't there? There's got to be at least, I don't know.
Well,
like
you've got the well, I mean, in Japan, the I've got, and obviously where you have, you've got the two versions of Ghouls and Ghosts, the Mega Drive and the Super Graphics, which are the same games. Whereas Ghouls and Ghosts is a sequel to that game.
Yeah, it is a original title
with fundamentally different gameplay.
Mm-hmm. Right. The levels still had similar themes from.
Oh, similar themes
that.
Certainly, but entirely different designs and entirely different gameplay.
You know, I really like. It, with regard to that game, is the conversations we had, even about the jumping, like
the game mechanics conversation.
Well, it definitely makes you think more about, you know, because there's so many games that play so similarly. It really takes something that does something in completely different to make you realize how similar all those games are.
Well, with the sound from Front Mission earlier. I mean, I'm aware of the fact that everything beeps in these games. People talk, but you really notice it when it's not there.
When it's not there, then it's like, you know, it's just something that's sort of in the background that you come to expect without really realizing it. And I think that's what's so interesting about that game. That was definitely one of my favorites. But I mean, also, I mean, plenty of the other ones I really enjoyed. Zelda 2 was probably the most trafficked in terms of, you know, the number of responses and stuff. Really stellar. I mean, it is a Zelda game, I suppose. That shouldn't be that surprising. It just in that sense, plenty of people would have played it before and been able to contribute. But that was really good too. So I mean, I think it's generally gone really well. Not so much this time.
Well, I'm just looking forward to the retroactive where you guys do Chawaniki. That'll be fun.
We can't, Johnny.
No, he can't. He's been blackballed now.
That's the thing, you know, Johnny. I mean, there will come a time, like much like this week, where he's
actually,
not around.
Actually, you know what? We could sell it right now. He's not here. We could say what next week's is.
There you go. It doesn't have to be a vote.
James has suggested a coup.
all right, John.
It's a home
around. You can be E10. I'll be Ben 10.
Done.
Oh, God. None of those names.
Done. Sorry, man, I'll go out and get my Speedos just over the next week.
Oh, God. It's totally a podcast.
It's totally
this
cool.
It's an audio
I'll
podcast.
Shave my back. It'll be awesome.
Oh, man.
That is a special event.
That is the nadir. That is the absolute nadir of this show ever. Well, Sophia did actually have a second question, which was, what are some of your favourite games of Virtual Console, games that perhaps you never played before, but that really made the service worthwhile for you? So, yeah, I mean, I guess this isn't like Super Metroid, basically.
Yeah.
You know, it's as wonderful as that is, and it's great to play it again. You know, you played it before, and it's kind of great and all that. So, yeah, I mean, for me, I've played so many, because a lot from the NES, because I didn't have an NES very long, and it was a crappy PAL one. Mm-hmm. Especially since I got the Japanese Virtual Console, that's been a huge thing. Like the Mega Mans, for instance, 2 and 3.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just great to play those. I did play 9 first, which kind of reduced the impact a bit of that somewhat. So, yeah, any similar? Matt, have you been a big like Virtual Console buyer?
I love the Virtual Console, and I especially love the concept of it. In fact, I bought a DSi specifically hoping that eventually they would release some form of Virtual Console.
I think they will. I would definitely be very strongly persuaded to get one once they do that. But I mean, so with the Wii, like any particular favorites?
What I really appreciate is, like you were saying, you know, you didn't have a chance to play many NES games when you were young. For me, you know, I had a Genesis later in its life cycle.
Right.
So like playing like Genesis games and like TurboGrafx-16 games, you know, systems that like I never got a chance to pick up.
See the other side of the 16-bit era. Genesis certainly has been a big deal for me. A lot of shooters on Genesis, TurboGrafx especially, that, you know, because Super NES was not very good at shooters in general.
No,
they were generally plagued with terrible slowdown and stuff like that.
Yeah, and it was a what's this hardware good at kind of thing.
Yeah, precisely. But there is one exception to that, which is definitely one of my favorite Virtual Console games, which is Axlay. Axlay is a quite a slow shooter. It's kind of designed around the fact that Super NES was not going to be able to do things really fast, but it's got a really sort of, you know, sort of intelligent, sophisticated, considered design that means that that slow pace is perfectly tolerable. You don't have to make a shooter just crazy bullet hell at 100 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think therefore that, you know, people might have looked past this because it is a shooter, might find that they actually like it a lot more than the sort of staples of the genre. You know, the weapon system is very cool. It's not necessarily one hit kills. Yeah, it's there's a lot of things to like about it, and you know, a certain amount in common I understand with Radiant Silver Gun, which is sort of the predecessor to Ikaruga, which a lot of people rate very highly. So definitely worth checking out if you've never done it. Although it isn't available in Europe, for the record. John, have you got any favorite buys?
Just
Last Ninja.
Nothing. I don't know. Nothing that really comes to mind. But I,
John.
Well, aside from are you saying Choaniki?
No, a certain Mr. Thunder is.
Yeah, Lord of Thunder's in there too.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Like, I mean, a lot of stuff like that I just didn't pick up. I mean. You know, that's been the best thing about
virtual consoles.
Well, I mean,
for stuff like that is super obscure, like CD games and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we've just never seen.
Yeah, but I mean, even stuff like the sequel to Super Mario Brothers.
Oh, the Japanese
all that Japanese
sequel.
Stuff. That stuff has been really cool to see, because I'm amazed that they've actually gone the extra length and actually brought that stuff out. I mean, I never would have thought that they would have been, you know, that they would have localized Japanese only games. It's like. That blew my mind.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, they tend to be games that don't require a lot of effort. They just put something in the manual, the digital manual or whatever. But no, I mean, just doing that is really cool. Of course, Sin and Punishment is great for people who hadn't played that.
Mm-hmm.
But I did just this week, Pulseman came out in America, didn't it?
Yes, yep. I love that game so much.
Definitely a cool game. That's well worth checking out. It's one of my favorites on the Japanese virtual console.
It's Game Freak before they became Nintendo's Pokemon slaves.
Exactly, before they became enslaved, and it's an imaginative, fun game. I mean, it is definitely really cool, and that's one of the things that you get with virtual console. I guess if I had to say one absolute, like, God, this is great game, like the most sort of amazing game on virtual console that I hadn't played before, it's Dracula X.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great
one. I mean, you can
one.
Get that on PSP, so if you've got a PSP, it's not a big deal, maybe. And, of course, it isn't out in America or Europe still, which is kind of weird, because they are still doing import games.
Yes.
So I don't really follow that.
I think it's probably a license issue, to be honest.
I don't know what's up with that, but it's on the Virtual Console of Japan. And, I mean, Matt, are you a big Castlevania fan? Have you got that on the Virtual Console?
Yes, and, in fact, I was obviously about the PSP one, but before that, you know, the whole thought that... Because, yeah, I never had a chance to play that game until it came out on Virtual Console and PSP, so
yeah.
When I heard that it was coming out on Virtual Console, I was beside myself with joy, because, you know, that's one of those, you know, rare treasures in the Castlevania library that the West never got to see, so
yeah,
it was just, you know, a joy being able to play that.
And it is really good. I mean, you know, it's one of these things where it's like, oh God, you know, the thing you didn't get, oh, it's brilliant, was it? Yeah, and it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, no, this game is totally, it's worth the hype, yeah.
Yeah, if you're a cast, if you like the old school Castlevania, the pre-Symphony of the Night Castlevania, the pure action, it's fantastic. So, I mean, that's a great pick. I'd still really hope that comes out somewhere else. It really should. All right, well, I'm going to get to the last question, which is actually from someone who didn't supply a name, unfortunately.
The unnamed.
Yes, it's a shame when that happens. But still, we're going to read his thoughts, and perhaps he can write in again with his name on a subsequent occasion. So, hello. I just want to say I love your podcast. I recently got into it. My first episode was 2 weeks ago. What makes your podcast so different from everyone else's is the retro stuff. I absolutely love it. I downloaded the Special Legend of Zelda podcast, and all I got was 2 hours of geeks talking about it, and I absolutely loved it. That episode is 1 hour and 16 minutes long, for the record. I edited it, so I know these things.
That's the one without me, right?
Simultaneously with you and without you, yeah.
Obviously, that is the key to a successful podcast, is just eliminating me entirely, so thank you.
Awesome. That's awesome.
Just basically shuffling me out when the real conversation starts.
So I said, please do more retro stuff. It brings back memories from my childhood. Are there going to be any other special podcasts regarding a retro game? If so, which one? Well, I guess the first thing I say, if he's just joining us a couple of weeks ago, is that episode 142 is the Super Metroid show, which is very much the same sort of format as what we do with the Ocarina show. So you could go back and listen to that. That's all about Super Metroid. That is actually 2 hours long. If that's what you want.
Greg can't bear to make the cuts on that one.
There was lots of cuts made. That was like way longer originally. But yeah, so that's another dedicated one. Of course, we do the retroactive stuff, but that's a bit different. We will, I mean, who knows, but we probably will do another special show. You know, usually so far it's been around anniversaries, and there is one that I have considered, which is that I think at the end of this year will be the 20th anniversary of Super Mario Brothers 3. So we could certainly consider that.
I now mean, that is a game that I have not finished, by the way.
Oh dear God!
What?
But I have,
is there something wrong with you?
Well, no. Listen. Before everybody, I mean, I'll get massacred
late,
in the forums
man.
For
too
that.
Late.
No, the thing is with
late,
that is that
late.
Basically I did not play that, but I did play through Super Mario World. For some reason I just skipped over that completely.
That's kind of what I would be concerned about doing it for this one, because it's Super Mario World is a better version of this.
Yeah.
Mario World didn't have all the cool power-ups though, you know.
I wouldn't say that, because they're all very similar, but there are differences, and certainly I don't think one is unambiguously better than the other.
I don't think so.
I think they're both incredibly good.
Well, you could bundle them together into one show.
I wouldn't mind seeing us do Final Fantasy 3 for Super NES.
Oh man,
I mean, that's a huge game, but I don't know if, especially depending on how old you are, I don't know how many people have really played that.
Yeah, especially all the kids these days.
Yeah.
There's no way that most of them played that. The only thing is and it's a very polarizing title. I mean, it's my favorite RPG of all time, because it was the first one that I really played through, and I love the music, the character design, everything about it was perfect, man.
Yeah. Blew my
but,
mind.
You know, then again, exactly. But then, you know, you have a kid that started on like Final Fantasy VII or even one of the newer ones, or, you know, God forbid, another RPG that's not Final Fantasy. And, you know, a lot of them will pick up Final Fantasy VI and go,
think it's crap.
Oh, this is just too old school. Yeah. I mean, like, why the hell is my character SD? You know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, we would always welcome people to suggest games for that as well as for retroactive.
Yeah. Because
it is like a very separate thing. It's something that would only ever be done occasionally. Yeah, we have had quite a lot of positive feedback for both of the previous anniversary shows, so it's definitely something we'll keep in mind. No doubt about that. So I guess we'll wrap up the show now. First of all, listener mail, if you want to send it in, that'll be rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. We always need more questions, suggestions, comments, feedback, all that sort of stuff. There's the retroactive nominations thread, if you want to contribute to that, what you want to see for the Super NES poll that will be forthcoming. Get in there. There's also iTunes, if you'd like to review us or rate us on that.
Give us a good rating.
That'd be good.
Give us a bad rating. If you're going to do that, F off.
Because, you know, it helps promote the show. You know, if you like it, helps other people find it, that'll help us out a lot. Also, there's Radio Trivia Podcast Edition, that a new episode of that, if you haven't already checked it out, episode 54 with Nick DeMola joining TYP. Definitely very worth checking out. Rate and review that on iTunes too. And well, Johnny will be back next week, so you can look forward to that. He's been doing some pretty cool stuff, as I understand it, so I'm sure he'll be eager to share with us when he does get back. So thanks to Matt for joining us.
Hey, thank you guys, I had a great time.
And James and John, as always,
a pleasure, my friend.
Yeah, and now I'm going to go to bed thinking about John shaving his back. So thanks for that.
What have I done?
That is the end of the show.
Indeed.
And the end of my innocence.
Not so innocent, Ace. Bye-bye, everybody.
Later.
Take care.
Japan's pricing policies are a little strange. Get weird stuff like, I think Wii Sports Resort is really quite cheap there, like relative to other. But then you get stuff like Disaster Day of Crisis is recommended price is like 6,800.
Good, they know
yen.
Quality.
Oh, wow.
like $68.
You're paying for the experience.
Actually, but
it's
it,
like
yeah,
I don't understand what kind of tactic that was.
Do you remember the brouhaha of the I Am Rich app on the iPhone? Think of
oh,
it,
yeah.
Think of Disaster Day of Crisis in that context, and you'll understand. I am willing to pay for this kind of experience.
Not many people are willing to pay for it in Japan.
I bought it just because the character, I had that same Abe Lincoln style of facial hair for so long that I was like, oh man, this character is like totally based on me. I mean, I bought it for
facial hair. Did you find him equally relatable when you played it?
That's the thing. I picked it up, but I still haven't played it.
What?
I was going to ask whether you'd ever sort of lost a close friend by dropping him into some lava or any of the fun that happens in that game.